Welcome to Minority Corner, where we take an introspective look at the world through an intersectional lens. I'm James, he, him. I'm a queer political activist, actor, comedian, self-proclaimed sexy blurred. That's a black nerd. And each week, I'm joined in the corner by other fabulous minorities and some allies tackling the news, pop culture, politics, media, entertainment, and history with a little self-care, self-love sprinkled throughout, all for our own personal and collective empowerment. Well, hey, corner kids, welcome back. And speaking of, like Loki, Mackenzie Green is back. Oh, yes. And we talk Loki, the MCU, and why do my friends keep spoiling these MCU shows to me? Texting all crazy. Also, we love our new generation of teen dramas, from the new Gossip Girl reboot to Never Have I Ever. You know we love Generation, but as Refinery29 points out, do all of these groundbreaking, diverse shows have a colorism issue? And are we blind to it? Even Mackenzie and I? Yeesh. In the main corner, we talk about racism in football, but not about the U.S. for a change. Oh no, we are taking a break, okay? We're taking a break from U.S. racism in football, and we're talking about football, known to us in the States as soccer. And with the recent wave of racism in the UK, it just highlights that this cycle has actually been happening. I will point out and walk you through this cycle that has been happening. Also, we look at the breakdown of the teams from colonizing countries and its connection to the racism that's happening in some of these countries and what can be done to help from what we as individuals can do, the government, and big tech. And then Mackenzie, in her corner, abandons her original corner about a deep dive into the classics. Can black people, you know, really enjoy the classics? All that is pushed aside because Jeff Bezos has a penis rocket and we need to talk about it. All this and so much more on an all new Minority Corner going down right now. It's time to learn, laugh, and play. Mackenzie Green, welcome back to the show. Fan favorite.
Oh my goodness.
Everyone was just clamoring to get you back onto the show. You're kind of like our very own Marvel character. Not like we killed you off, but like they just wanted you to come back.
Like, you know, I like to hope I'm like the Ant-Man of the show. You don't think you need me, and then you realize, like, I might actually really be important to the plot line.
Otherwise, nothing in Endgame actually happens. I actually recently, so look at the beautiful segue into Marvel. Look at us.
Oh, yeah. As I say to my family all the time, all roads lead to Marvel with me.
Oh, it's so true. So two points. One, I was rewatching. I did the Disney Plus. They always trick me into like rewatching Marvel movies. They've already done.
Yeah.
Like I already did. Like, you know, watching it in order that they timeline order. Right. So you watch like Captain Marvel second.
Yes,
Captain
they're
America
good with
first.
That.
I love that. And then I was like, well, I'm done. I don't need to do this for a while. And then they're like the Black Widow collection. I'm like, well, I don't mind if I do.
Yeah.
To see if there is a thorough plot line. And what you realize is they're literally just like whatever man was writing. They're like, this is what I need Natasha to do in this movie.
Yeah. They were like, I just need her to throw her legs around somebody's neck and tackle them to the ground. And we all love that sexy Krav Maga that she does.
Oh, yeah.
And then it's like,
that's it.
And then there's like, and then they just decide what Avenger is she going to have sexual tension with this time around?
Yes.
And then at the end, it was like, Hulk.
Yep.
That makes sense.
Okay, that will do that. And then just for one movie, though. Because then they, like, never address it again.
Yeah.
They have one. They don't see each other until Avengers. Endgame. I think it's Avengers Endgame that they see each other. Oh, no. It's Infinity War. And because he just came back. And they just give each other a look.
Yeah, he, like, lands from another planet.
And they just give each other a look. And that's it. And then he throws a bench when she, spoiler alert, dies. Like, he throws a bench. And that's, like, it.
I think I rewatched Ragnarok and I thought maybe I was having a fever dream because I had to keep being like, what's happening? What? Why? How long? Wait? Who? He's been rewatching a video of Natasha for the first time in like 20 years or something. What?
And like, how did that little Quinjet get all the way out to the outer reaches of outer space and like nobody's ever most of these folks had never been to like outer space. That little Quinjet went all the way, or I don't know, maybe he got sucked up by some sort of portal or something.
I think he did, okay. By something, but yeah. And I'm like,
yes. Well, I will say, so we'll circle back to to Black Widow in a moment, but I do want to highlight that something keeps happening to me with these Disney Plus shows. So there's been three, so two out of three of them,
yes.
The big reveal has been spoiled to me by friends through unsolicited texts. I will do everything in my power to, like, I'll avoid the internet. And like, I'm talking, like, early on, right? So it'll be, like, less yeah. than, like, the first one with WandaVision. I can say this now because it's been months. But
honestly, at this point, if this is a spoiler for you, like, what are you doing here?
Somebody who's a frequent, you know, maybe co-founded this podcast. We already talked about it, so I'm not throwing her that much under the bus. But texted me, it was Agatha all along. And I'm like, I don't know what that means because I haven't watched this episode. And then somebody, so the Loki premieres on Wednesdays. It's Wednesday yes. at like 8 p.m. I'm at the gym planning on going home and watching Loki. Someone sends me a text. I'm going to blank this one. They said, oh, I'm excited for blank name of actor to be the next villain. Oh, interesting. And meanwhile, I'm watching.
Thanks so much.
And we were even like hypothesizing together like the other night, like, you know, and just I'm watching all these YouTube videos and these Easter eggs and like. I'm thinking it might be that, but I'm actually thinking maybe it's not going to be that. And I just couldn't believe it. Wednesday, it's been out for like not even a full 24 hours. Unsolicited text. I don't think we were even talking. Like the code, the nerd code is you always say, hey, have you seen X or where are you in this show? And then even to like, especially if it's like a show, you always like, I always like, if they're like, oh, I'm up to season three, I will still only talk up to like season one or two and let them lead the conversation. Because I am so spoiler adverse.
I mean, like, so one of my really good friends from college, he and I like kind of got into like reconnected literally over Marvel content. Like he has a baby now. So it's very funny because I'm always like, shouldn't you be asleep? And he's like, I'm up with the baby. And so he started blocking me on Twitter because I was tweeting about the shows as I was watching them. And because I'm an early riser, right. I'm like, okay, I get up at 5 a.m. Like I get for the audience, this is aggressive, but I wake up at 5 a.m.
Yes, also for the audience, and I would be it like, is 7 a.m. of us recording, and Mackenzie Green is the only person I will ever get up to record at 7 o'clock in the morning. And to highlight,
listen,
we both were like black and on time, so it just...
Oh. Absolutely. This is a whole thing that like my co-host on the Taylor Strecker show complains about. Taylor Strecker's like, why do we record? Now keep in mind, guys, it's 9 a.m. on the East Coast. I'm up at to do the show at 6, and she's like, it's so early.
You're
I'm like it's not early.
You're fine.
Yeah, but I would literally watch the show. I would like work out, be in my, and so to me, I was like, I'm starting the show late at 7 a.m. And so I would start watching it and then be like tweeting and like watching fan theories on TikTok.
Because there's people
and
who already watched
so
that, like, there's people like have watched that like midnight. Yes. So you're like, oh, I'm behind.
Exactly.
I got you.
Yeah. I was like, I'm behind the real.
Because I used to do WandaVision at the midnight drop. But then like I got a real, my job, I couldn't do it anymore. It was like, I can't.
Yeah.
I have
a life.
I'm like,
guys,
I
so
can. Yes. I'm like, I'll watch it on like the next day. Like just, and not that far off. Right. So anyways, sorry.
Well, he got furious with me during Falcon and Winter Soldier. That was when he like had enough of my tomfoolery and was like, I blocked you on Twitter. And I was like, what are you blocking me for? And he was like, I just can't with you. You just can't be tweeting out. You have to put spoiler at the top. And I was like, they're not spoil. Like, I don't write spoilers. Right. I literally write a stream of conscious tweets. And I'm like, come on, Wings. Yes, Shield. Like I tweet like I'm texting somebody through the show.
Yes.
And so I'll just be like, now I'm sobbing. Like you can tell where I am in the episode based on like, I'm crying so hard. I have a headache. Isaiah Bradley is a treasure. And so like he would just get mad because he was just like, I'm just seeing a thing here that says like I'm sobbing and now I don't want to watch. And I was like, what do you think? Like Bucky's dead? Like, what do you think I'm tweeting? Like, what do you... If it was something that big, bro, like,
right,
the internet would have told you.
You would have already been known. It wouldn't be Mackenzie Green breaks this news about that it turns out, like, yeah. Bucky's...
And then
Captain
he got
America.
Mad during, like, Loki, he was like, I'm blocking you again because I don't want to have it spoiled. I was like, let's be very clear. I know the least about Loki. I have no idea what's happening. I'm like, I have voluntarily chosen at times not to even pay attention to these Thor movies, and then I'm a late in life lover of Tom Hiddleston.
Then
I fell in love
cuts.
With Tom Hiddleston.
Yeah,
I really didn't get him, and then somebody was like, oh, the dude that plays Thor is dating a black woman, and I was like, oh, mm-hmm. oh let me pay attention mm-hmm. now. And then when I watched Loki, because I never got his appeal, I was like, I don't get what people are into. I don't understand. I think it was also the glow of Taylor Swift on him that I was like, I don't understand you. Yeah, I was like, ugh.
But we
know that.
But I keep forgetting I've seen her documentary and I'm not like that like so uppy about her. Like I keep reminding myself. I'm just like
she's here. Like I feel about her like I do about the Kardashians. I'm like, yeah. I'm like, you're here. We're all here together.
We're all trying to survive. Exactly. We're all human. We're all going through stuff. I get you. I see you. You're going through your journey. Go off, lawyer Kim.
I'm like, live. But yeah, the Loki series, my whole thing about this is like a wild, this has nothing to do with people spoiling, but like the Loki series to me is fully like where people thought WandaVision was very conspiracy theory, like tinfoil hat Marvel fans. I'm like, no, Loki is full on like pictures on the wall.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Like everybody kept reading so much into WandaVision, and like there's this guy, New Rockstars, that I follow on YouTube. He does really great Easter egg videos. And he had us everybody down this rabbit hole about Mephisto. Everyone's like, oh, Mephisto's coming, Mephisto. Yeah. And this time with Loki, everyone kind of scaled back. They're like, oh, there won't be this big of a reveal. No,
but
it was straight
reality,
up.
It was so...
And it's setting up
God.
The multiverse. It's doing...
But it was the most intricate. Because there's a guy on TikTok who showed this whole video, and Straw Hat Goofy, who I also love on TikTok, who's amazing.
Check it out.
He's this really dope kind of
Did
like
he point out the
fan.
Thanos copter in the background? Like
yeah,
these
so
deep
he pointed
cuts.
Out the Thanos copter. But here's the crazy deep cut. If you start the WandaVision finale and the Loki finale at the same time, when Wanda is transforming into the Scarlet Witch,
I know where you're going with
is
this.
The same is the when same the moment you hear the thunder crack at the
I
thing.
Can't.
And he
I'm
and
done.
when he says to them, like, oh, it's too late. The timeline's already changing.
Oh,
and they're like, huh? And he's like, you better make a decision.
Oh,
and it was
shit.
Like, because it's happening.
Oh, shit. And she hears the voices of her little kiddos.
And then they showed that at the end at the same time that he is running to be like, you know, where are we? And then when he's looking at Kang, that's when you hear like, mom,
because her kids are probably from a different multiverse
on another timeline. So now that she can hear them. But literally they. But I was like, that's the show.
This
been the show
the
where you're supposed
show.
To fully.
Yeah. And I think people were kind of reserved. Who were so burned by it. WandaVision, like not burned, but like because it was great. Everybody loved it.
But
it's Emmy nominated.
It was great. It was the show where people thought that it was going to be the most like, did you notice in the background at 1:16 that there was an ant and a bee that flew by because that was the Ant-Man and the Wasp because they're in the quantum realm because that's quantum mania and it's all
one of it was very much a contained show about Wanda's grief. I will say this, the shows and then even going into Black Widow, when getting these standalone series, when I did go back and I was watching the Black Widow collection, Wanda's story is very, she's in every movie that Black Widow's also in because they're like, woman, okay.
They're like, hang out together so we can pass the Bechdel test.
Okay, one thing I do want to touch on before we get to the corners is you and I were, you know, chit-chatting back and forth about we've fallen in love with teen dramas. I think you and I are actually splitting the difference because I just finished Never Have I Ever. I accidentally watched all 10 episodes in one weekend. I thought I was doing, it's the Mindy Kaling show.
No.
I thought I was doing so good. I was like, oh, I'm like spacing it out. And then Sunday it was 10 o'clock and it was like one episode left. I'm like, the fuck? Like,
I told you.
So good. Super diverse. Euphoria. Generation. You're on. We've been talking about this because we're really excited about that new Gossip Girl. And you and I were so excited. And then Refinery29 came out with this article and they're like, let's talk about the colorism and all these new teen shows. And they went for every one of the teen shows that I love. Yes. What were your thoughts and reactions about? Because we were both so excited about, like, ooh, yay. And yeah. Gossip Girl has three black women.
So when that came...
Light-skinned black women. That,
so here's the thing. So when Gossip Girl was on, I remember just being like, God, Serena's gorgeous. Oh, my God, Blair. Oh, what a wonderful world. And then I think it was... Who was the actress? I'm not remembering her name, but she, like, she came and she was briefly Chuck Bass's love interest, and she's black, and... I was like,
oh, yeah,
Tamika Sumter.
I heard about her.
And I was like,
oh, yeah.
And I was like, oh, my God, there's a black girl on Gossip Girl. Like, I didn't care what her plot line was. I didn't care if she was
You're
Georgina.
Like, I feel seen. Yeah. I'm included.
I didn't care if she was
Look
Georgina.
At these breadcrumbs they would give
oh,
us.
Just like, I was so happy like, for that oh. scrap. I was like, oh, my God. And then Chuck, like, broke up with her devastatingly. But I was like, I still love Chuck Bass, though, because he likes black girls. Like, I was so hyped for that little bit. So when I watched this version, I was like, oh my god, there's so many black people on here. Oh,
you don't have to do the mental gymnastics
of trying to find to try to find them. And then, like you said, that article came out, and I kind of had like my Rita Moreno moment where I was like, it took us this long to get here and you're already mad? Just take what we could get and be happy. Like, I remember that controversy around SNL, like, this is related, I swear, when they did the Gen Z hospital, and like Michael Che, who's black, wrote the sketch. And when people were like, it's appropriating AAVE, and he got online and he was like, what the hell is AAVE? I've been black my whole life, and this is the first time I've ever heard this phrase. And he was like, you know, good old AAVE. And it's like, I kind of have, like,
I don't know what AAVE is.
African American Vernacular English. I was like, did y'all just...
What?
I said, did y'all colonize Ebonics like this? So that you could...
Who did this?
But it was this...
Little Nas X, is this you? Who did
this? But that's
this?
What I'm saying about,
these
like,
kids.
The dramas. I get it. I understand the criticism. Yes. I'm also simultaneously standing there going, do you understand what the 2000s were like when every teen show, teen drama, I was like, it was always some background character or like one sassy gay black man who'd be like, you go, girl. Like, it was basically the character.
Barely.
It was basically the character that was in, what is it, To All the Boys. Like, that was all you got, was like one background character whose job was to set everybody else up.
And highlighting, I'm so glad you mentioned the 2000s, is like, the 2000s was one of the worst decades for black people in television in general, because we had President Bush, it was the Bush era, 9/11 had happened, and so there was no space to have any conversation around race. No. It was like America.
Everything
and that
was like
it.
The OC.
Yes.
It was just.
Even just like black sitcoms disappeared.
Or I don't
like,
think
we disappeared.
Under-
we were like. On Lost, like ensemble shows would have like, oh, there's the one black person, and so we kind of felt included, but we were not starring any series
or
shows.
It's like people are very confused why like black people love Gabrielle Union so much, and I'm like, do you understand? In the 90s, that was the only black woman in everything. I was like, everything. Friends, 10 Things I Hate About You, Bring It On. Like, if there was a show or movie that was like, oh, we need a black girl, it was either her or like. Christina Milian, like those are the only two.
Oh, that yeah.
They'd be like you two.
Maybe Megan Good started to creep
Megan
up because she was
too.
Doing like indie stuff. But like that was it. They had this roster of these three, you know, black women. I will say the thing that like the article, you and I had a very similar experience, and I think here's the thing. Similar, I feel like now the shoe's on the other foot, because like when In the Heights happened, I was like, because I was like, ooh, how dare they? Because I stand In the Heights. It was the first Broadway musical I've ever seen. And, you know, Afro-Latinos do not get their representation. They like change one of the characters who was very much Afro, like the love interest in the Broadway musical. She's Afro-Latina. And I guess I had my Rita Moreno moment because I was on the other side of it. So I'm like, oh, I'm part of the community. I'm just like, oh, I felt so seen. But at the same time, like, I guess they're right, especially with the article points out that especially for like in teen dramas, especially like there's no like dark skin black girls, and that they kind of bring this thing of like usually it's light skinned is a more for like femininity and softness, and like you'll see darker skinned black men or boys, but there's a more like sort of toughness.
But I think
that comes
that's
along
why
then
I'm like, oh, because I think that my brain goes like, oh, well, there's grownish, and there's, you know, it's like I instantly am like, oh, there's other shows, there's other like teen dramas, but then I
but
also
even
remember
grownish is getting credited for being kind of yes. light, like on the lighter
and then
skin
so
of the
then
tone.
I'm like, well, you're also old and you're looking at things, because I have to always think of, because I go back to the Rita Moreno thing where I'm like, here is a woman that did West Side Story where the crux of the story
yes.
is Puerto Ricans ugh. Versus Americans, and she's like, and I'm the only yes. Puerto Rican on this set.
On the set.
On this set. I'm the only person here who is Puerto Rican. Okay. Well, at least I'm here. God. And I was like, so from her perspective, yeah. to fast right. forward and look around and be like, oh my God, it's a movie where people are speaking Spanglish and they're like, and yes. they're talking about like the barrio and they're talking about Boricuas and oh my yes. God, and people are actually Latino and Latina. It's
like, yes, there's no like white person, not, like Scarlett Johansson's
yeah,
not
she's
popping
not playing.
Up being like, oh.
I
she's
can play
not
a tree, so I'm playing a Latino woman. And so it's like, I can understand where she's standing. So like for me,
yeah.
I get the article and I get what the article is saying and I get the writer. I also have moments where I'm like, do you know how cold and lonely it was in these streets? Like, just begging
yes, yeah.
to be included in the plot line of something so glamorous and so like, you know, I was like, because where how I grew up, because this is why I love Clueless. And this is because people always
yes.
think I'm being
oh,
insane
yes.
when I say
I
this,
love,
is I had
it.
Never seen a black girl growing up next to white people with the same stuff. Because I existed in a world yeah. in the 90s where it was always like, boys in the hood, we getting bussed into the nice school. Teach me, teach. I won't be smart too. And it just always felt very like, okay,
yeah.
That's not my black experience, but I'm glad, you know, we right. got one. And then all of a sudden, here was Dion running down the stairs to get in Cher's Jeep, and they had all the same stuff. And I was like, wait, that's me and
right.
my friends.
Yeah.
Because I don't.
Yeah. And Dion wasn't the only, because he also
yes.
had Murray. And then if you go to the TV show, Clueless was actually, the Clueless TV show was a black show. Why do I say that? Out of the five characters,
oh.
three of them were black. Because yes. then they gave Murray a black best
yeah.
friend. And they didn't
he
have
had
to do
Sean,
that. They
the
gave
dude
Sean.
That had been shaving his head in the movie became a main character.
Yes.
But to me, it was like, oh my God, this is. So it's, I get it. And I also am just standing
yes.
there like, then I turn into my mom and I'm like, guys, let's not talk about black people's business in front of mixed company. Let's just discuss
oh, yeah.
this amongst
right.
each other
we
separately. Let's not do this
yes.
here so they don't take it yeah. away from us. Like,
they're like, fine, you can't be happy about nothing. I absolutely agree. I do say like it was this. It's this thing of like, I think this was the conclusion I came around with in The Heights, and I'm going to bring the same thing here, is that like you can still like love something and also want it to be better
yes.
inside out.
That is
and
the
so
way I feel about Hamilton. When people are like, how can you like
yes.
it? I'm like, I can like it and also critique it. And I'm like, y'all weirdos that like love the thing you love and also cannot critique it. I'm like, well, then you don't really
right.
love it
yeah.
if you can't look at
yeah.
it and be like, oh, that's weird.
How do we make it? How do we? There's always something like, how do we make it better? So we hear you. I hear you. You're right. And also, too, like, it's, I think, I hear it. I see it. And also, it makes me a little bit blind to my own colorism sort of blind spots that I
Listen,
might have. I think just being so hungry, just
yes.
being so hungry to be seen, I think it can blind me to other folks that, like, who probably definitely don't get seen then, you know?
I mean, I acknowledge that with my absolute love and adoration of Crazy Rich Asians. The first time I really heard critiques that were like, well, what about this? And why wouldn't they represent? Or like this person like that? You know, I fall into that trap where I'm like, yay, Mulan! And then I have like my Chinese friend texting me being like, so this girl's really pro-government. And I'm like, I don't understand what that means. She
yeah.
goes, imagine if Chadwick Boseman had been like pro-police. And I was like, oh.
Uh-huh, yeah.
I was like, so
yeah,
so should I just not get this on Disney Premiere Plus? Because I want to make sure I do the right thing. You know, it's like, I think that's the thing.
I waited. Plus, they were filming right next to, like, the camp.
Exactly.
So that wasn't really
but that's
great.
Right. But it's like,
just,
I think we, because I, you know, we all saw this during the movement. It's like people being like, aren't you excited? Aren't you proud of this? And you're kind of like, this isn't what I asked for. So, but... I'm glad it makes you feel seen. So I get it. I get the critique. I also just love the mess. And I love, I don't know. I also love that it's like three main black characters and they're all wildly different personalities. And it's just like, finally.
Yeah. I'm excited. It's on my list. I have to get through one teen drama at a time for me. And I don't know what this renaissance is. Like, just turned 36 and I'm like going in deep on the teen dramas. There's a long time when I wasn't. But you know what it is? They got me back where it's not just stories about white kids.
That's where I
was watching 90210.
I remember thinking.
And now I'm going in.
When I watched Never Have I Ever the first time. And I agree with Mindy Kaling. And it's a little bit of what Robin Thede was like. It's called A Black Lady Sketch Show and not The Black Lady Sketch Show.
Oh, yes.
Is that when people have that criticism of like, well, you picked this light-skinned girl and you picked all of this, and I agree with Mindy, it's like, this is just a South Asian teen drama.
Right.
It's like, this is the start of us there shouldn't have to be everybody trying to represent everything in one show because we're afraid we'll never get another one.
Yeah, and I think that's the problem is because there's been such a lack of few, and I think that's the answer. We just need more, and then folks will start feeling, you know, more represented, you know. That glass ceiling's coming cracking down. We hear you. We see you. Everyone going to do better. That's what we're going to do. All right. Well, after this break, this won't surprise you. We're going to keep talking about racism. But this time, because you're here, I feel like we always go across the pond because you and I have connections to the UK. We're going across the pond, taking a break from the racism in the US and going to the racism happening in soccer, a.k.a. football. The job market is a mess right now. Whether you're looking for a new opportunity or want to make yourself a stronger candidate for promotion or how you present yourself, it's key to taking that next step. So, executive presence is the secret sauce to success, and Rotman's unique virtual executive presence program will equip you with the tools and tips to engage and influence others. Rotman has designed this comprehensive virtual program to work around your current schedule. With Rotman Executive Presence, you can balance working from home, watching the kids, with building your emotional intelligence, and making connections with peers across different industries. The University of Toronto Rotman School of Management is one of the best schools in Canada and the world. It's ranked number 17 for open enrollment executive education by the Financial Times. Okay, I see you on that list. So, all you need to do is visit uoft.me/executive presence. Once again, that's uoft.me/executive presence to learn more and apply. Classes start September 15th, so you better get looking. Start your application today to save your seat. Once again, that's uoft.me/executive presence. Rotman. Here's where it changes.
Hey, I'm Jordan Morris, creator of the Max Fun scripted sci-fi comedy podcast, Bubble. We just released a special episode of Bubble to celebrate the launch of our new graphic novel. At SF Sketchfest in 2019, we recorded a live show with Allison Becker, Eliza Skinner, Mike Mitchell, Cristela Alonso, and special guests Jean Grey, Jonathan Colton, Jesse Thorne, Nick Weiger, and a bunch of other cool folks.
We suspect he'll show signs of mutation when in a state of excitement. Now, Annie matched with him on Tinder, so she's going to act as the honeypot.
I do enjoy being called a honeypot.
Hey, you know what's better than honey? Gravy.
Oh, yeah, can I be the gravy sack?
Out now on MaximumFun.org and wherever you get podcasts. And pick up the graphic novel at your local bookstore today.
All right, so we're going to take a change of pace. So anti-blackness, it's a global phenomenon that happens. It's not just for the U.S. It happens everywhere, which I think is just a good – sometimes it's nice to take a break of, like, the mess that's going on in your own house. You can be like, oh, see you too. I see you. Y'all need to – you know. So we're going to do that. Because the last time we talked about Little Mix, Leanne Panock's documentary about race, power, and – music or something, race, power, and pop, something like that. I don't know. It was catchy. So I don't know if you know this. There was some racism that happened in football. I'm going to alternate between football and soccer, depending on.
I call it football because having to have worked in the space.
Oh, yeah.
And people find it very pretentious.
Great. So we're going to be pretentious here. We're going to be fancy. So I just feel like our listeners will be so confused, but our listeners in the UK will be so appreciative. So we're going to lean towards that. So there was a football match and three black football players became victims of racial abuse. They missed penalty kicks while playing for England against Italy in the European Championship shootout. So there were three players, Marcus Rashford, Jadon Sancho, and Bukayo Saka. They were getting racist targets of abuse on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. So a lot of the stuff was happening where racist abuse or abuse of any kind tends to happen in the social media sphere. And we're really trying to catch up and figure out, like, how do we deal with this? The big hubbub was because this was England's straight failure from the penalty spot in the shootout. And England was just, they're very passionate about their football over there. I think two things help Europe stay out of wars: Eurovision and football, because they're able to just sort of like, yeah, they're able to put all their energy and passion into this, and then they fight it out through song and through sports
and dance.
They need a dance competition. I think that would help too. And so there was all this, like, people were like, oh, okay, you know, social media needs to do more. Facebook, you did the usual, just like, oh, we're looking into this. Or like, oh, we're going to try to take down some posts. And then, you know, Twitter was, you know, came out and they were like, oh, you know, racist abuse has no place on this platform. And that they had software to try to remove these, but I guess it just wasn't doing it fast enough or something. So, again, just the usual, oh, we're looking into this. Racism has no place on our platform, but it feels like it seems very at home on these platforms is what I.
Well, the thing that is missing from that that was really controversial is you also had people out like headhunting.
Yeah.
Black folks.
Yeah.
Leveraging social media to be like 10 points if you punch a blank in the face, like.
So just taking it even from the social media sphere to the human sphere of just we're gonna take it to the streets.
IRL racism, which is really just, you don't see a lot of that anymore.
Yeah, it's sort of just like, you know, wars. Like most wars are fought in the digital space. That's what Russia learned.
Yeah.
They're just in kids in basements, tic-tacking away, dismantling our democracy.
Always amazes me about this conversation of like racism across the diaspora is I share a mutual friend with Meghan Markle, and this mutual friend got a lot of backlash years ago because she said the reason people are attacking her is because the British press is racist. Uh-huh. And people were like, you're an idiot. We don't have racism here. Shut your face. Go home. Go home, turtle. You're drunk. We don't have that problem. And I remember the first time I was working at a very different place, like a millennial marketing company. And I think I talked about this last time. And I said the line to this girl where I was like, oh, they don't like Meghan because they're racist. And she was like, they don't have racism there. And I was like, oh, baby, it was called the transatlantic slave trade. Like, we just remixed it and just like put a little American spice on it and did a little too much.
Bigger,
like,
better, faster, stronger.
Yeah, I was
more
like, you know, we got to do the most with it. And so I think there's something so funny about like the timeline of events where you have like the Oprah interview, mm-hmm. you have like the royals being like, we don't have racism here in the UK. We go past that. And then like Harry doing that show with Oprah and being like, so again, let me reiterate, that place is racist as hell.
And also,
and then, like, his brother
and Leanne coming out and being like, this has been my experience. She had a camera, she was filming things and she was getting into the trenches. And then he was like,
and then you have like the Diana statue dedication where he's like, again, let me just remind you all, my brother is from a very racist place. I am not. And then like to immediately have that and have William be like, we don't condone racism. Racism is okay here. And it's like, sir, why don't you clean up your side of the street first before you think that you can tell people to chill out?
Because Prince William and Kate came out and they were like condoning it. Not condoning it. They were like, you know, condemning it. Wrong C word. Whoops, Freudian slip.
Oopsie poodles.
Yeah, they're like, oh, this has, you know, no place in it. And here's the thing. So the government, the British government has come out. They're like, okay, they've been trying to do a crackdown on large tech companies with, they have a proposed online safety bill, which would give their media watchdog Ofcom the power to fine companies up to $18 million. That's 18 million pound, which is $24.9 million, or 10% of their annual global revenues. Because right now, like, nothing happens to these companies in the same way that, like, if a media company to a certain degree is out there, you know, propagating some, you know, to some degree, supposedly, to a certain point, like, right, you can be sued for being liable in the United States or even in the UK to some degree.
Yeah.
There's nothing for these social media companies. And even UK Prime Minister Boris Johnson is like, we have to ban these things. And but there's all these things that are happening, right? So I was doing some research and talking to a friend of mine who, one of my colleagues, he's black in the UK. And one of my other friends who's from, like, the Caribbean at work. And they were saying, like, again, this won't surprise you, that none of this is new. So much to the fact, no. I started doing some digging. In February 8th in 2020, there's two articles I found. One from February 8th, 2020, and another one from June of 2021. So before even this recent hubbub had even happened, they were already talking about this one from February 8th. The title is English Football is Consumed by Racism and Hatred. Can the Cycle Be Broken? And so they painted, it's so fascinating, in this article, it paints the cycle. So the cycle is that happens. So, like, okay, here's some highlights that have happened in the past. 4 decades ago, in their debut, this football player, Cyril Regis, was sent a bullet in the post by a racist fan. So that was 4 decades ago. In 2008, after being appointed Chelsea's manager, Avram Grant was hit with dozens of anti-Semitic emails. Last season, Heron Gay Borough in North London was the victim of racist abuse from fans during the FA Cup qualifying game. Their goalkeeper was spat at, was thrown stones, and was called a black C-word. And, like, this is just, like, their go-to for a lot of this. Like, their players, yeah. They get, you know, racially abused. One player, his girlfriend was followed, and she was pregnant. And they're like,
oh, they are real quick to they're real quick to throw some bananas at you on the field if you start pissing them off.
Yes. And now this abuse is just transformed not only in person, but it's now also on Twitter and Instagram, where things get, you know, very gray. And there's a huge mental taking that happens for these players. Like, the trauma, for one, it's already anxiety-inducing enough to go out on the field, play this game that you're really passionate about. There's a lot of pressure. And then when things are not going well, people, like, you know, don't win, you're getting all this abuse. And some players don't really recover from it. It mentally fucks them up. They walk away from the game.
What always fascinates me about racism is I have never been like, oh, like, I'm just going to use a real out there. Like, I never thought to myself, like, if Jeremy Lin missed a free throw for the Raptors, to be like, I know what I need to do. I know what I need to do to help him be better. I need to call him every Asian slur. And then I need to send him a bag of human feces. And I need to tell other people
to do the same.
All the slurs to do the same thing. Like, it just... there are all these, as somebody who loves stoicism so much of it is about, like, trying to understand, like, trying to pause and have a moment of understanding, of trying to, like, step into the shoes. And I'm like, I've never been mad enough at a barista at Starbucks for getting my order wrong to be like, come here, cracker, let me tell you something. Like,
you know what? Those shoes are too big. They funky. They're confusing. How do I put these shoes on?
They're confusing shoes. They're two left feet that, like, missing a heel.
Is this Velcro or a latch? Like, is this a lock?
Yeah,
there's a lock on it?
Is this fun? Do you enjoy this? This isn't fun.
How does this work? This report pretty much highlights that there's a pattern that has always existed. There's a cluster of incidents that happen. Statements are issued. The government gets involved. Broadcasters, public figures clamor over each other to condemn it. Now you've got, like, social media graphics. And then, like a wave, the anger subsides and people are on to the next thing. I just was in this article. Yeah. that was written in February 8th of last year before this latest wave
had
even
happened.
So because I was interested because I was trying to find a more recent article and I was having difficulty because my Google IP is from the United States. So typing in like soccer racism, I was getting things from the United States and that wasn't my focus this go around. It's like, no.
And they're like, and they're like, wait, do you want to know about ours? And you're like,
no.
I'll get back to you later.
We'll got to that next week. That's next week. I want to talk about this one. And then if I go racism in football, it was like America. It was very difficult for me to be able to find. But this article popped up and I was like, well, it's saying
that's
the things.
That's even sadder that it was like, racism in football? Oh, God. Where do you want to start? Kansas City Chiefs? Dallas Cowboys? Are we doing a team? And you're like.
My computer actually exploded at that time when there was a big fire and I had to like put it out. Racism in football. Boom.
Yeah, it's just it imploded on itself.
You even had, you know, like even Pierce Morgan and Boris Johnson were both coming out and being like, racism has no place here, right? So
I love when Pierce Morgan gives his two cents on like, let's not be racist. And you're like, sir, I don't need to hear from the cannibal on why we shouldn't eat babies. Like,
good night, ladies and gentlemen. That's the show. That's all I need to hear. but, you know, to your point, we're talking about this, is that like, so there is this culture in English football. It's consumed. There's a lot of hatred in it. It's this us versus them, superiority, masculinity, hierarchy. Again, this is why I think I love Ted Lasso so much, because it like breaks down so much of this stuff.
Yeah,
great show. But online only exacerbates this. And so here's something that is so fascinating on another level. When you break down the breakdowns of these countries, it's a whole other level. So England is one of five countries alongside France, Portugal, and Belgium and the Netherlands with very diverse squads and where players of color have a huge long-time presence on the national team. But coincidentally, what do all those countries have in common? Major colonial powers.
I was about to say, I was like, colonialism. Wah, wah, wah.
So they have this, like, you know, catalog of black people to choose from and play on their teams. And for a lot of these folks, their like national identity gets attached to how well they perform and they play. So France and Portugal took on their first black players in the 1930s, and the Netherlands in the 1960s. And then England debuted in 1978 with Viv Anderson.
Black people came onto the scene in 78.
They were like, because they were like, see other teams getting all these like black players, and they're like, okay, oh, let us get in there too. We got those. We got a whole plethora. Get on that field.
We got a whole bunch. We went to a bunch of countries to find some.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm doing the Southern voice. I keep forgetting. I'm not talking about racism in the U.S. Oh, we got a lot of black people over here too. Get on the pitch. Get on the pitch, mate.
We found you.
So in Euro, so in this recent cup, between a third and a half of the squads of the old colonial players will be players of color. And then breaking down just like the racism and hate crimes that have been happening, you know, last season, 280.
Just that little bit.
Last,
the racism and hate crimes.
You know, the hate crimes. Like last season, 287 of the 2,663 football fixtures who played in England and Wales, more than 10% featured at least one incident of hate crime. And last year, racist incidents or chanting and hate crimes rose by 150%, even though fans stopped attending matches in March due to the Ponder replay. So it could have been even more.
I don't understand. How do you keep remote racism? Like, what?
Yeah. And then, Portugal, so Portugal saw a surge in racist attacks over the past year that spilled all into the football player, where the crowd like racially like abused him. So I just think it's so fascinating because you have this like history of, you know, colonialism. It's very similar to the U.S. where you have like all these like shut up and play, shut up on getting the and do good.
Yeah.
And do good.
Yep. Shut up and dribble. Yep.
Yep.
It's like, yeah, it's just I never am ceased to. I think what always blows my mind, particularly about the world of racism in football, is it's so ubiquitous and it's so obvious.
Yeah.
And it's always, because I think I'm about to give like a real pass to somebody. I can get why a Drew Brees, who has existed in this insular world where he has not been in the car with one of his black teammates when they get pulled over by the cops, like who doesn't have any of that to draw on when he says, like, I don't know about this Black Lives Matter. But if you are Neymar, if you are Ronaldo, if you have seen bananas get thrown on the field, you have listened to people. So how the fact that you're not in your press conference like, hey, guys, chill out. Yeah. If you don't stop, I'm not going to come to this game. Like, yeah. If you like, I think it's always this interesting thing when people are like, what's the first step? And I think that's what people are talking about with allyship. Yeah. It's like you have so much power and so much ability to change all of this that the fact that you're just like, ooh, hey, you okay over there, man? It's like, no, I'm not well,
not
bitch. Like
all.
In the words of Dorinda Medley, I'm not well. Like,
that's your responsibility.
What do you want me to
do
with this?
Something, be
yeah.
a fucking human being. And yes, absolutely. And so there, so in Belgium, for example, there again, this I was talking about like how their nationality is tied to how well that they're doing. And so in Belgium, there's a lot of like, you know, division between the Flemish and the Walloon identity, and this, you know, hyper cosmopolitan mix of Brussels. And there's this one player, Romelu Lukaku, who was a Belgian striker. He said that when things were going well, they were calling him Romelu Lukaku, the Belgian striker. But when things are not going well, they were just calling him like the Belgian striker of Congolese descent. So they would make sure to like, oh, he's here.
Yeah, make sure
to
be like,
oh,
he's not
from
yeah.
over there. Yeah.
He's not one of us.
And so they, like, in some ways, like, you know, since in response to George Floyd, you know, like Black players, Black people around the world have been like, oh, us as well, like Black Lives Matter. It's a yeah. it's a global movement, and it's been met with like, you know, France did like a diversity day, like some folks aren't getting the support. There was one team, I think it was one British team that was like, okay, yeah, you can kneel if you want, and but some of the white players were not like as supportive, and so there's a lot of like side that's happening. And what's interesting is that the other group of like diverse squads that are like were not non-colonial powers are just having a different journey and experience.
Yes.
And so it's so interesting that the ties to like what your country did back in colonialism.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Even Germany, who actually was stripped of its African colonies, because you know when you know they were like, okay, you can't have these anymore.
Y'all messed up.
But
y'all,
Germany
messed up on some things.
Germany has literally, I'm trying to like equate like who is like, they have literally just had this like, you know, comeback, did it right. They just really have like taken amends.
Listen,
and atonement.
Because they made the biggest oopsies. They're the equivalent of like They really pulled an oopsie daisy that has sat with them forever.
And they've atoned
and
for it.
Yes. It's just always comical to me. Like, even just, I keep thinking about when people are like, a critical race theory. I'm like, you know, that started in Germany because they were like, you know what we don't want to do again?
Yes.
The big oopsie. And we don't want to do that again.
And if they call it critical race theory, I'm like, you mean history? You're just talking about
yeah,
history.
Like, you mean history?
Because that's what we're just, oh, you don't want to teach history class? Like, what are we doing here?
So it's like this, it's, I think it's what I think what we see with the world of football, particularly in the countries that had colonizing, is what you're seeing is what everybody thinks is the right thing, which is let's not talk about the thing. And it's like, so we're not going to talk about the leak in the ceiling. Mm. No. Cause it's just like, it's just a little watermark. Okay. But now it's turned into a bubble. So like, are we going to do anything with that? It's like, no, it's fine. It's fine. No. Cause see, if you poke it, all the water's going to come out. And you're like, well, I think the water's going to come out anyway. So maybe we should do something. No, leave it alone.
Also, this window's broken.
Like, okay, well, yeah, and it's like, well, now it's dripping. Well, that's good. Now the water's coming out. And you're like, but I feel like we should have a different plan than just letting the water leak out of the bubble at the ceiling. And then, like, everybody's shocked when they walk in and there's a hole in the ceiling and, like, the stuff from the roof, the friggin' insulation's all over the ground and it's in your stove and everybody's like, so are we going to talk about the hole? And it's like, I mean, I think if we put a tarp up, it should be fine. And you're like, okay, well, now there's a raccoon up there that's trying to get through the tarp. And if it gets in the house, we're screwed. And everybody's like, well, okay, so when the if you hear a raccoon, let me know. But I think for right now, we're good. And like, that's what I feel like we're looking at, is everybody goes, let's not talk about the thing.
QAnon would be like, what hole? I don't see a hole. That's not a hole.
Yeah, they're
that's
like,
a window.
Not a
that's
hole
a window,
up there.
Actually.
Yeah,
it's a skylight.
Yeah, they're like, that's called a skylight. You're welcome. And you're like, no, no, that's a hole. The rain is now coming in. And they're like, we'll put a tarp up if you got such a problem with it. And you're like, okay.
Yes.
And like, that's the best part, is I feel like the onus is like, all the black people are like, there's a hole up there. And it's like, and it's about to storm. Well, go put a tarp. So you want me to put a tarp, but this is your house. You told me I was a guest here. No, no, you should go put the tarp up. Oh,
okay.
Okay.
All right.
But that's not the tarp I wanted you to use. Oh, okay, but this is the tarp I'm gonna use. Or we're all staying there going, so we can actually just go move to a different house if this is gonna keep happening. And they're like, no, you can't leave.
Nope, you gotta stay here.
And you're like, okay.
You gotta stay here and play the games.
Okay.
And
yeah,
play
they're
our
like,
music.
No, you need to stay here
and do this.
Yeah,
stuff.
And keep doing our thing. And I want you to make dinner, and I want you to help with the house. But yeah, if you got a problem with the hole in the ceiling, well, you should have a problem
yeah,
with the hole in the ceiling too.
We
should all be concerned.
It's about to rain, y'all. It's about to rain. So yeah, so again, like with Germany and Sweden, like they're but not to say that they're without. I mean, white people go still white and revert back to like racism. So there are even some people who
I say that all the time.
White
too.
People go white, and
I'm like, white people
that's
white,
what they
man.
Will do. And so like, so there are some people who are just like, oh, you know, are these, because they have players like in Germany from, you know, Cameroon. They've got Chilean, Croatia, Kosovo, Bosnia, Albania, like the Congolese, yeah. like Sudanese, like it's just like all over the place, because they've been, Germany's taken a lot of like refugees. It's been this like, you know, place
yep.
of where people can come. And a lot of times in a lot of these countries, though, the only thing, this is very similar, this is like kind of a worldwide thing. The only thing available, so a lot of times, like, you know, football is associated, honestly, with, like, a lot of, like, working class, like, folks. And so a lot of
yep.
working class.
I was just about to say, I think that's where a lot of the anger and machismo and tying your identity is. It was, and actual British people, correct me, it's like cricket was seen as the affluent sport.
Yes.
That and, like, polo
right.
and, like, these very kind of, like, austere sports. And it's like, and football was for, like.
Yeah.
It was like the way we treat basketball in the hood here.
Really, and then interestingly enough, so this is why in all of these different countries is that if this is the more so like working class sort of sport, and a lot of these people who maybe immigrate here or are like, you know, second, third, fourth generation are still, you know, financial racial gap is still there. It's not a thing just here in the United States. So long story long, a lot of black people worldwide play football too for economics. And so this is why you have so many people on some of these teams. They're just like overly represented as well. But just again, it's a sort of like shut up and play thing that happens. Some countries that don't have this issue, which is really interesting, not issues, just because like they're very a monotone country. So like Italy, entirely white team. Spain has not had good luck with like importing other players from other like their like they did a lot of colonization too, and they just haven't responded well. They're just like, we don't care
yeah.
that you are also of Spanish speaking descent. You too Basically. Black for me. Like, bye. And in fact, like Italy, I guess when Mario Balotelli, who was Italy's first black football star, played, people in Italy was like, there's no such thing as a black Italian. And he's like, but
I mean,
I'm
it's
right
wild
here.
To be when people will be like, yeah, when people will be like, from they'll be like, oh, there's no black people in Japan. I'm like,
you think we
I'm pretty.
You better go watch
I
Yasuke.
Yeah. So I'm like, guys, I think they were there.
Yeah,
I think they've also been
everywhere.
There too.
Yeah. Yeah. So what to do? What to do? Right. So wanting to leave us with some, you know, possible things. So racism's everywhere. Bottom line, racism's everywhere. Colonialism has a hand in it. There are
too long. Didn't read racism. It's in right now.
So there are things to do. So one, continue putting pressure on tech giants to obviously make changes, having some sort of deterrence, cooperate with investigations, because in some ways, and this could be used, we can, this doesn't have to be used for evil. So for example, that when hackers hack banks, There'll be an investigation to find out what the IP address was, and they'll go after the, okay, you stole all this money.
Yeah.
So in the same way, like, tech giants do have data. They know who sent those tweets. They know. So if there's like, and so if they're setting up a system, I know that this could be easily abused towards black people. Like, oh, she's on the beach.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm going to go arrest her because she's black. But like, you know, figuring out, we just need more rules and regulations within these tech giants, and having deterrence, finding them, right? Like, you have all this abusive behavior that is, in some cases, enacting wars, insurrections, making people commit suicide. You are have like this death machine spoiling things for people about like Loki and WandaVision. Like, that's gonna create wars, right? You've got a friend who can't even talk to you.
Refuses to engage.
We gotta fix this. And we also need like laws from the government as well to just help with, like, you know, regulating these systems. And we also need us as human beings on this earth to keep doing the work and stop being so damn racist. That's it. That's my 3 points. Those are my 3 points of how we fix this.
You know what it reminds me of is when I don't know if you ever watched the show Silicon Valley.
I have not. It's on my list.
Okay. Well, Kumail Nanjiani is on it, and it's not something that happens on the show. Kumail talked about when they, because here he is a South Asian man, and pretty much the rest of the cast is white, and he was talking about when you would go to these tech companies, and you would ask, like, an ethics question, or you would ask, like, oh, so you obviously must have somebody on the programming side or the AI side of a diverse background to help you build all of this into, like, the algorithm or the intuitive nature of the tech. And he was like, these guys would look at me like I had said nonsense and then would be like, no. And he said, and his perspective as a Pakistani man was, oh, you guys aren't at all making this for the rest of us or thinking through how this serves.
Yeah.
And so, like, when you said the thing about putting the pressure on them, I'm like, the other part of the pressure is, like, have more people in the room who can give 2 cents on, does putting a COVID warning, it's like, I've seen a lot of people point this out, it's like putting a COVID warning on an Instagram story but not putting a racism warning on something that deals with race, you know, or like TikTok will allow you to say white power in your bio but you can't write Black Lives Matter without being flagged for community guidelines. So it's just like having more people in the room who can, because it's not that inherently the person is doing something racist.
Right.
It's that is not anything that has ever crossed their mind, much like our Gossip Girl thing. It has never crossed that producer's mind that there is not a single black person on this show except for one person in the background that we're like, there he is. There he is. There
I
is
got him. He had a line. He said, hey, girl. And we're like, oh, I'm seen.
Yeah.
I'm seen. And then again,
we're here.
And I will say there is probably some, like, white producers who are like, read that article from Refinery 29 just crying. They're like, I thought I was doing the work. And people are just like, not getting enough.
Listen, it's what somebody said. I thought there was a great piece once that was like, I don't want diversity in friends because I don't want people who don't think black people exist in New York to make a diverse
version
of friends.
You don't
it
want
was like,
that
I want
person.
Them to just keep making the show that they're making.
Yep.
But yeah, I mean, that's my thing with this. It's like, I don't. And it kind of goes into my corner. It's like, some of these billionaires and these tech giants, I don't expect anything better from them because of how small their thought process is on what we actually
need.
We're
going to talk about penis rockets. Wait, before we get to penis rockets, I forgot to drop this one bit of anecdotal information from my two friends, my colleagues who are connected to this, right? And I was trying to Google and find articles to back this up, but I couldn't. But this is their experience, and they know they're on the ground, black and in the UK. So they said that several players will be born in these colonized countries in the Caribbean or South America and then move to their colonizers' countries and play there. And sometimes if they don't make the team, they'll go home and just play for their home team. So you just really get, like, people, we just everywhere playing for everybody. And so if you look at the rosters of, like, Jamaica, Brazil, Guadalupe, Suriname, and some of the West African countries, you'll find several players who have dual citizenship and sometimes will be playing where their dual citizenship allows them to go and play. So you have players in Jamaica playing on the UK team. And that some players are making the conscious choice, actually, to sometimes they'll go back to their original, to not playing for their birth country, but just going to actually their origin country to go and help beef up and support those teams. But of course, like teams like Nigeria, who are just up and coming, don't have the sports federation support. They're new and they're up and coming. And so some players have to make the decision of like, well, I want to be like, you know, a really famous or rich football player, because for a lot of folks, for people of color, and this is a worldwide thing, our only track to success is like sports and music. And it's just it's just so wild. I just didn't even think about that. It's not only here in the United States. It is a global thing. This anti-blackness is a global pandemic, y'all. And I have 3 points to fix it. Pressure on tech giants, government laws, and us doing the work.
Boom.
Lifespan Fitness is dedicated to making fitness accessible and affordable. They believe that your office should help you work and feel better with under-desk treadmills and exercise bikes. So Lifespan Fitness's treadmill and bike desk help you make the most of your workspace, whether you are starting your fitness journey or wanting to stay more active at work. I have found the treadmill desk. I love it so much. It has helped me to get my steps in. It also really has helped me to just with my thinking. I don't know if you about you all, but I do some of my best thinking while walking. I wish more of my meetings, I was saying before I had this treadmill desk, before I had the treadmill, but I wish more of my meetings I could take outside as I'm walking and just moving. I am a very kinesthetic person. I like to move, like to get my steps in. Y'all know I'm really big on fitness, and this has been so incredibly helpful. And for the most part, people don't know I'm on the treadmill until sometimes they'll hear me, you know, I'm walking a little bit too much and I'm panting or whatnot. I work from home, and this has been just a really great thing to zhuzh up my work-life experience and balance and making sure that I get my steps in, because I'm not walking outside as much as I used to, and is having to go into an office or run to an audition. But now I'm getting my steps in right from home with my treadmill. And if you already have a standing desk or a desk that you love, you can easily add an under desk bike or treadmill. It's pretty easy. That's the setup that I had. I did. It just fit right underneath and was really easy to set up. So all you have to do is visit lifespanfitness.com and use code MINORITY at checkout for 5% off. That is lifespanfitness.com and code MINORITY.
Since the dawn of time, screenwriters have taken months to craft their stories. But now, three Hollywood professionals shall attempt the impossible. Break a story in 1 hour.
That's right. Here on Storybreak, I, Freddie Wong,
Matt Arnold,
and Will Campos,
the creators behind award-winning shows like Video Game High School,
have 1 hour to turn a humble idea into an awesome movie.
Now, an awesome movie starts with an awesome title.
I chose The Billionaire's Marriage Valley.
Mine was Christmas Pregnant Paradise.
Okay, next we need a protagonist.
So I've heard Wario best described as Libertarian Mario.
And of course, every great movie needs a stellar pitch.
In order to get to heaven, sometimes you gotta raise a little hell.
That's the tagline!
Check out Storybreak every week on MaximumFun.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Okay, over to you. And, well, tell them what you were going to talk about, and then tell us your journey.
So initially, I was going to do it about being black and reading the classics. Mm. Because the last time I was here, I spoke about kind of my thoughts about stoicism, how a lot of my things are kind of informed by stoicism. And actually a few people, lovely listeners, like tweeted like, what the fuck is stoicism? And I was like, oh, that's really cool. Let's talk about that.
There was also a listener who was like, oh, I'm now getting into stoicism because of your talk.
Yeah. So I was like, oh, that's really cool. And so I was like, and then I know that there's a lot of conversation, like Howard recently got rid of their classics department, right? Because obviously the feeling people have is like, how do you listen to these old white men that own slaves about how to look at the world? And I was like, ha, 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 it's everywhere. And so I was like, we should talk about that. So I had thought through it. I had prepared. And yesterday I went down to the gym. I worked out. I was thinking through it. And my mother is here visiting me. My mother is a woman of a certain age. And so when I came upstairs, she was in her room. And I walked in and I was like, oh, what you watching? And she was disgusted. And I was like, what's happening? Are you okay? And she just goes, Jeff Bezos came back from space. And I said, oh, okay. I was kind of like, oh, okay, yeah, because Richard Branson went up Tuesday and now he's going up a week later. Like, that's cool. And my mom just goes, all the people that he could have helped and he went on a pony ride to space. And I had this revelation. And so for a lot of people, they're like, no shit, Sherlock, this is not a revelation.
Yeah.
That I was like, oh, I think I need to change my corner. And my corner will then make no sense because I did no real research. It's just really me ranting about how annoying this is. Because as I was sitting with my mom and we're just watching this and she just goes, this was ridiculous. This made no sense. Like, and she just kept pointing out all the things that were irking her. She goes, first and foremost, imagine you're an Amazon employee right now and you just watch this man land on the ground and you're like, oh, I can't even get a raise in my minimum wage.
I can't go to the bathroom. I can't go to the bathroom.
I can't pee. And I just watched him go to space.
For fun.
Goes, then she goes, then the money for you and your brother and your penis rocket and your cowboy hats.
Okay. Can we pause on that?
The machismo.
Can we pause on that penis? I thought it was photoshopped. Someone was like, oh, they're like, look at Jeff Bezos' rocket. I'm like, oh, that's funny. Internet, you crazy.
I was like, you guys are so
funny. Yeah. Oh, internet. So once again, like, they're just like, Photoshop. Like, that was legit. What?
That's what it looked like.
My friend sent me from a science magazine. He was like, and this was like when they first were building it, and it was a science magazine.
Yeah.
And it was a picture of the penis rocket. And it was like, a science magazine was like, Jeff Bezos, what are you trying to prove? And that was the headline of the science magazine.
Like, poor scientists are like, this is not what this is. Then I remember as my mom is standing, my mom goes, I remember when they sent a man to the moon, it was a collective experience.
Right.
We as a nation were part of the process. She goes, now you got a bunch of rich white guys just deciding that now they want to colonize space. No. They've run out of stuff down here. So now
we've already colonized everything here. What else can we? Oh, what's up there?
Then she points out she's like, there is a kid, a high school graduate in this rocket. And she goes, the arrogance and white privilege I bought my son a $26 million ticket to space because he has done nothing more than get his high school diploma and he deserves a shot. It was just like the things she was saying. And then simultaneously, we were talking about just like that kind of money. Like, we were talking about Mackenzie Scott, his ex-wife. And I said, what she has done is the greatest flex an ex-wife will ever do. Because what she has said to all of us is, hey guys, I have an eighth of Jeff's wealth. And I can't give this shit away fast enough.
Mm-hmm.
Every time I give it away, I make more off the tax write-offs.
Right.
I make more. Like, she has proven to all of us.
He could be doing more. That he could be doing more.
On the day he goes up, that was when they announced that I think he has $218 billion.
So much money. There's,
and it's just.
My brain.
And my mom kept saying, she kept saying, like, he could fix all the pipes.
I was just going to say. Like, there's the.
And then I have, like, billionaire comparison where, so I spent about a year and a half, obviously, at BET, where I was previously working for Tyler Perry.
Yeah.
This is a man that you're like, for all the things that he does are crazy.
He does a lot of good stuff,
and
too.
And there's a lot of them. He does a lot of good
stuff.
Where, like, you get a phone, you get an email that's like, hey guys, heads up, just so you know. And it's not to tell us to, like, announce it. It was like, oh, just so you know, Tyler paid off, like, 5 grocery stores in Georgia for seniors. You're probably going to see a lot of comments about it on social. We don't really want to get into it. So just, it's like you would get messages that were like, hey, we're probably going to go play the layaway over at 10 different Sears this Christmas. So just ignore it when you see people comment. It's like people be commenting under a Tyler Perry show talking about, God bless you, Tyler Perry. We just have to act like, cool, keep watching BET Plus. It's like he's so nonchalant about it that it's like, I don't want to talk about it.
Because that's so funny, because that would not be my, like, when I am rich and famous and doing lots of charity, like, I will be announcing it all the time because that's how I do good.
I'm not kidding you. When I watched him, what my mom and I did when we watched him is my mom was like, let's pray for a second. And what we prayed for is my mom was like, God, if you bless me or my daughter or generations of my family with this kind of increase, I hope that we bring good to the world. Like, we literally talk about that sometimes. Yeah. Like, I could not imagine having his money and not just, like I said to my mom, I couldn't imagine having a fraction of that. And even watching, like, Sha'Carri Richardson get shut out of the Olympics and not be, like, sending a message to her family being like, how much money do you all think she would have made this year?
Yeah.
Like, if she had been able to, and then, like, just secretly her Venmo has, like, $80 million in it.
I feel like that's how, and you look at, like, Tyler Perry, his journey, too, and very similar to, like, with Oprah, like, you know, just these people who had these struggles or these, and come from that the Black community, and what we do is we take care of each other, and we take care of our communities, and I think you just have, you know, I don't want to, like, again, this is me just, since we just are, like, you know, hypothesizing and just, you know, on the hill gossiping, you know, but you had, like, with, you know, Manifest Destiny, it was, like, white people who were, like, I need my own land and my own space and my own thing, and just spreading out and being, like, this is mine and I'm taking this. And whereas, like, we come from communities that are very much,
we have, like, Eatonville, and we're, like, do we think we can build a sustainable community like this in Tulsa?
Yeah.
We think we could do this and not have to bother anybody? Like, let's try.
Let's try. And then they're, like, we saw what you did, burn it down, everybody dead. My same thing. I had, like, you go through this list, your brain can't even keep up with all the things that this man could have done. And during the timing, Jeff Bezos, you could wait 2 years. We're in the middle of a fucking pandemic.
My mom said, read the room. And I think, so again, and this does tap into stoicism for the people who are like, I wanted you to talk about stoicism, not Jeff Bezos. I was reading a passage today. So there's a stoic principle called sympathia, which is this idea of, like, we are part of the whole. It's kind of that Neil deGrasse Tyson concept of, like, when you look up at the stars and you see how massive space is, you realize how both insignificant and special you are, that you're part of this. And so much of, like, Marcus Aurelius's meditations is about thinking of the collective. You know, he tells you, like, if you don't want to work, it's not about you. Like, you've been given a purpose that is contributing to the whole. And so it is impossible for me to understand how you have 200 plus $1 billion, and your first thought, like, I heard Melanie Hobson speak once, and she was talking about she and George Lucas are giving all their money away when they die. And she said, at some point, money can only buy you space and things. And after a while, you have all of the space and all of the things. And so it's this, I tell my parents all the time, I'm going to be a horrible billionaire. And I hope to manifest that.
Yes.
And I know some people listening are like, there shouldn't be billionaires. Capitalism sucks. And I'm kind of like those TikToks where I'm like, yes, it is fuck capitalism. But my family did not pick cotton and build this country for me to be over here just living the worst life ever.
No, not at all. This is part of reparations.
So I truly have these moments where I'm like, oh my God, when I have $1 billion, I'm going to do this. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do, like, I just don't understand how this man isn't just like, oh, you know, I can, yes, is Bill Gates, you know, do we want to call him morally direft? Sure, whatever. Live your life, Bill. But at least he cured malaria in Africa.
He got to the point where, again, he was like, okay, like, that's the thing you're talking about, space. And he decided I didn't want to go into space. Because when you said that, I was like, oh, Bezos chose I'm going to buy more space as in I'm going to go into space.
I'm
going to
go into space.
And so I'm the same thing. Like, even, like, now, like, you know, I'm starting, you know, I have my first full-time adult job at a 9-to-5 that I enjoy, which I never thought was possible because I'm like, I'm an actor. I'll never be able to have a 9-to-5 that I enjoy. But doing DEI work at a company that I love and I'm helping to build and be morally responsible. And I'm starting, like, I'm just that Oprah model. Like, I love being able to pay for dinner for friends or to send somebody a gift and to be able to do good things. And I don't want to just, like, hoard it for myself. It's like, what are the other good things that I can do and support people in my family? Through my mom, this bomb ass, like, 60th birthday on Angel Island, was able to get her a laptop, do all these, like, nice things for her. Because I'm finally in a place where I am not on the struggle artist bus. Who knew? I just had to give up on my dreams to, like, you know, be financially stable.
Well, like, I just remember Oprah once saying, like, there's nothing better than giving.
Yeah.
And I guess where my brain can't process with Jeff Bezos is, like, the limit does not exist. You could give every day with the way people buy on Amazon. Hell, I was just at Whole Foods yesterday. That was money in his pocket. Yes. Like, the way you are making money hand over foot every day, you could be giving billions of dollars worth of aid to so many people, mm-hmm. and it wouldn't make a dent in your wealth.
Yep.
Like, you would still, sir, be able to pay for gas money for your penis.
100%. He could even be, I mean, we could just, I feel like that could be its own podcast of things. It should be a podcast, things Jeff Bezos could do with his money. And you would just, every episode, talk about, go through a thing that Jeff Bezos could be doing with his money. Like, even, like, building, like, if we're, like, not producing enough, you know, vaccines, he could open up a factory to help produce that. Oh, we need help getting more electric cars out there. He could be doing something that did that. It would also be making money off of that. So then he could take that money and put it into, like, you know, solar panels or, like, more water to help, you know, the fires. There's a list of things that he could literally help this world in such. And, like, people would love him. People would love him. People would love him not be, and then you could then still go open your penis rocket. That'd be fine. We're like, you go out, Jeff Bezos.
And we'd all be like, oh, Jeff, okay. You're so silly. So, like, crazy. I think that's to an He's extent that of why we can all, like, we can all roll our eyes about Elon Musk and also kind of be like, okay, Elon. Because at least when he's talking about electric cars and high-speed railway, we're all like, oh, he's the worst. He's here comes Elon. And then we're just like, hey, Elon, good to see you.
How's that electric train coming? Are we getting there?
Yeah, you're like, how's this high-speed train? Yeah. I don't have to use fossil fuels from the plane anymore?
Ooh, okay, all right.
That's cool.
Oh, he's the worst, but I can't wait for it.
Oh, God. Why do we invite him to anything? God. But I think it is. It's just, to anybody out there who's been like, oh, I heard you talk about Stoicism and I learned more about it. I think what becomes the strange thing in Stoicism is you realize what fully thoughtful leadership is not doing the right thing, because even Marcus Aurelius talks about this idea of the third thing, is that, like, we do things waiting for the third thing to be the acceptance, the accolades, the acknowledgement. And it's like, stop waiting for the third thing. Just do good because it's good. Right. It's what you were made to do. And so it's just something about watching a man go up in the sky just so that he can feel what it's like to do that. It's like, you could have funded our government space program to allow the next generation of Mae Jemisons and, like, incredible STEM education so that they could have taken us as a country up to space. But instead, you're like, oh, I'm good. I can handle this myself. And anybody else that wants to come ride with me that has enough money to chip in for gas, you can also come.
And if he was smart, he could have, like, what he should have done, linked up with Oprah, brought her School of Black Girls up there, and then no one would have been coming in for him for colorism because it's been girls of all different shades. Like, he could have done so many different things with this. Just, like, just bring a little black girl with you, and you would have been, like...
That was another line my mother loved. My mother goes, not a single person, not a single ounce of melanin is getting off this rocket. And then she goes, but what I love is they have clearly a black intern handing them the champagne that they're spraying on each other. And she goes, nothing says I have no clue what's happening in the world quite like going to space and then spraying expensive champagne that was handed to you by a colored boy. And I was like, all right, mama.
There you go. Right. And I just, in the middle of a Ponda replay, in the middle of a panorama.
We're just out here in a parallelogram. And you're like, you know what people need for hope? This. And I thought one of my friends, I think, I have no action items. I'm not nearly as thoughtful as you are about this. But I think one of my friends said the best thing. She was like, what if instead of racing to go to space, they were all racing to see who could cool down the planet the fastest?
Right?
And I think, and I'm just, I don't know if it's about putting pressure on them. I don't know if it's about, but I think it is, I guess my overall, like, goal is we have to support each other who are trying to achieve great things, because we will be the next generation of leaders that don't do dumb fuck shit like go to space while people are dying and hungry.
Well, I think
the earth is on fire.
And I think we can't look to these yahoos to obviously do it. So it's on us. So it made me think, I was like, okay, because I used to, like, I have to stop myself because I used to, like, side-eye people in my family and wag the finger of, like, oh, you shop at Walmart. It's so terrible. They don't, you know, promote black women and, you know, sweatshops and all this sort of stuff. But here I am, click clacking along on Amazon because I need this tomorrow. And, you know, and so I too, and I'm like, you know, oh, Jeff Bezos, da da da. Meanwhile, I'm like, here's money, here's money, here's money. So I think for us, it's like offsetting that. So now what I'm going to challenge myself to do is like, every time I purchase like a certain percentage of, if I purchase something on Amazon, donating it to some sort of organization that could need of help, or putting something like, because otherwise I'm just also like complaining, but at the game, eating a hot dog and just being like still like participating, you know? So I think I think it's on us to be, we can't, we have to be the heroes that we're looking for, because clearly it is, we can't wait for Lex Luthor to turn around and be good.
As a nutritionist friend of mine said, you want to replace before you remove. So it's like, if you're an avid book buyer like me, think local bookshops, think bookshop.org, think of all the alternatives you have. There's Libro FM for audiobooks. And like you said, if you can't remove it just yet, just be like, how much did I just spend today on toilet paper? Okay.
Yep.
You know, I personally am trying to shop at the farmer's market more. Ooh. And then I'm like, oh shit, I don't have, because they don't sell almond milk at the farmer's market, because they're like, bitch, we don't have that here. And if I
like,
forget,
do you know how much water it takes to make that almond milk?
Yeah, they're like, yeah, they're just like, you dummy, drink real milk from my cow.
I'm not like, trying to like squeeze milk? These almonds into milk for you.
They're like, ma'am, I have unpasteurized homegrown cow milk. And I'm like, whoa, cow. But, yeah,
it's just, it's like the most purest milk.
Yeah, they're like, ma'am, this is so good for you. And I'm like, where's what?
Oat milk?
I don't know. That doesn't feel good for my gut. And they're like, your ancestors were here long before you, and now you can't. You need milk.
Oh, God. Well, there's the show. Nothing to fact check here. Nothing to see here, people. That is it. No notes. We did what needed to be done. I do want to read our review of the week. This one, written on Apple Podcasts, comes from AO Smitty 13. I always feel like a substitute teacher with your Twitter handles and your handles. I always feel like y'all are going to get me to say something silly. But they wrote 5 stars. James and his content are excellent is the title. Oh, I'm intrigued. They wrote, James is such a brilliant, entertaining host who brings a light to even the darkest topics while still educating people on their far-reaching implications. Short and sweet review. I appreciate it. Thank you so much. Thank you for the call out. I appreciate it. You too can listen to a you can listen to a review here on the show. Y'all, it's still early in the morning. Remember, Mackenzie made me get up so early to do the show, but here we are. You could write a review for the podcast wherever you podcast, and you can also tweet at us as well. Send us a tweet, shout us out on Instagram. And a huge thank you to Sarah Brown, our editor, and dare I say, moving on up, producer as well. And Lori Fowler, big thanks, our production coordinator. And thank you to all our Maximum Fun members and our listeners of Minority Corner. We can't do the show without you, because together, we're the majority. Have a great week, y'all. Love you.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.